Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 224, and we've got a rag and bone buffet of news and personal info and other stuff, and I'm just going to throw it all at you like some big salad. We're also going to talk about What's That Squeal, the game show you can play with me right from the comfort of your own vehicle, a product review of Tread Tape, and a tale from the road involving Australia and things not seen. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thanks so much for joining me here once again. I've actually got the episode going on Wednesday, and that is a significant improvement over last week. Thank you very much for your patience. Look, folks, there is a lot of stuff going on, and I started collecting news for this week, and it was like more and more and more news. And I just thought, instead of having a main segment, I'm just going to give you a whole bunch of little segments as a main segment, because there's a lot of stuff going on. First, I'm going to tell you about something that happened that's a good thing and a bad thing, and I don't really understand it, but here it is. Some of you who produce YouTube videos and podcasts are also in the same situation where companies will offer to give you a product in exchange for a review. And, you know, a review with some limitations or no limitations or whatever. And I've done a few of these, mostly for refrigerators, and basically they just sent me the fridge and said, make us a video. And I made them a video, and that was the end of it, and it's been fine. And, you know, my videos are always honest, and I'm not going to make one that, you know, basically pumps up a product just so I get, like, Amazon revenue or anything like that. I refuse to do that. I've had a lot of people write and tell me, we will give you this unit for free if you give us a positive Amazon review, or sometimes they'll just offer me money. They'll say, here's the product for free. You can do whatever you want. But if you do a positive review, we'll give you an extra $50 or something like that. And I just tell those people, just go away. I don't want to do business with you. That is not what this is about for me. I'm not trying to make money. I'm trying to make an entertaining and informative show here. And that would be disinformation. And I am highly, highly opposed to disinformation. So I've turned down 90% of these offers. Sometimes, though, I get an offer that seems pretty good. This one involves a stereo. So last week I talked about Android head units for cars, and I got a very specific email from a company called Junsun, J-U-N-S-U-N. They're a Chinese company, and they make these units, these Android head units. But they made one that exactly fits and only fits my particular vehicle, my 2019 Ram 1500 Classic, which has the SLT trim, has a very specific radio, and it's built into a bezel, and it's not a DIN radio. You can't just buy a single DIN or double DIN radio and replace it. Plus, it's integrated into the vehicle, like you control the daytime running lights and whether the doors lock while you're driving, that kind of stuff. You control that with the radio. So in the past, I had this add-on wireless CarPlay unit that I reviewed a while ago, and it's actually an additional screen that sits on top. This company offered to send me something that would fit my vehicle exactly with a replacement bezel, so it looks like it's factory. And it will control all that stuff that I didn't think was possible from a radio. But basically now I have installed this Android head unit that fits my vehicle perfectly, and I can still control all the stuff like daytime running lights. So awesome. Now, what did they ask in return? They asked me to make a video, which I did. I made an extensive video that talks about the unit, what it's good for, how you go through all the settings, all this stuff. But for the first time, this company asked me to give them permission to review the video before I posted it. So I'm like, okay, they're sending me this for free. That's a done deal. I'm in turn agreeing to make them a video. That's fine. But whether that video gets posted or not is up to them. Now, we didn't talk about podcasts or anything. This is all about YouTube. That's what they care about. And so, like, okay. So here's the situation. I installed the unit. I love it. I love the unit. It is not at all hard for me to give this thing a glowing review. It's only $169. It's very affordable. And I sent them the video, and crickets. I haven't heard anything back. They haven't given me permission to post the video. They haven't given me any reasons not to post the video. They've just stopped talking to me. So basically, they sent me this free head unit for nothing. I mean, they're getting nothing out of it. It's very strange. I don't know what to make of it. So I wrote them a letter back, an email back, and said, hey, haven't heard from you. Here's the deal. If I don't hear from you in a week, I'm going to post the video. Because I spent time making this video, I'm going to post it. Very strange. We live in this really weird world of products being given to, quote-unquote, influencers. And what they do with them is all up in the air. But I can tell you, there is a lot of temptation to give influencers stuff so that they'll promote it even when they don't really want to. So I'm seeing that firsthand. I promise never to do that. I am not shy about shooting down a product if I don't like it. And I will do that if somebody sends me something that I don't like. But it hasn't happened yet. All the stuff I've reviewed that you've seen has been stuff that I can genuinely recommend. All the refrigerators that I did videos for, I genuinely recommend. That little inverter that I did a video of that didn't get a whole lot of play. They wanted that one on TikTok, so I put it on TikTok, and I don't have any TikTok following, so whatever. I did what they said, but I do recommend it. It's fine. It's a really inexpensive way to get some 110-volt power in your vehicle. And this Junsun stereo, I completely recommend. I love this thing, and I don't know what's going on. So anyway, that's the reality of the world today. If you are listening or seeing an influencer and they're recommending a product, don't necessarily believe them, because they may have some sort of reason to lie to you. And that's something I promise not to do. If you see a place where I've lied to you or have been incomplete, absolutely tell me. I want to know. You can get a hold of me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. So, yeah, weird, huh? And another bit of news, that's a little bit personal, kind of stuff that people don't talk about a lot, but I have a new diagnosis. Ooh, this is a medical diagnosis, and it is something that many of you also have, is severe sleep apnea. So there is one number they look at, basically, to tell whether you have sleep apnea or not, and that number is normally a 5. So a normal person will get a 5, they don't have sleep apnea, everything's fine. I got an 80, which is 50 points above the line for severe sleep apnea. So basically, I don't breathe at night, and that's a bad thing. So I have been recommended for a CPAP, and I've gotten a lot of email asking about how do I use a CPAP in my van and all that stuff. And I've given recommendations based on my research, but I've never experienced it firsthand. And guess what? I'm about to. So you're going to be hearing a whole lot, maybe not a whole lot, but you'll be hearing more about using your CPAP in your van, and where to get distilled water, and how to power it, and all this stuff. And yeah, that's coming to a podcast near you, and to my life personally. And I'm not looking forward to being a member of Team Night Vader, but if it helps me stay awake during the day, I'm all for it. Okay, more traditional news now. Do you know what a future liner is? Future Liner is a vehicle from 1939. It's this crazy, really cool RV, and there's only a few of them in the world, and one of them is for sale right now. So you've got to check out the link. I can't do justice to this thing on a podcast, but it is the most Art Deco vehicle you can imagine. It looks like something out of Speed Racer, if you remember that old cartoon. Remember the monster car from Speed Racer? It kind of looks like that. It's this massive red bus, and the driver sits on top in like this pod up front. It's a really cool looking thing, completely Art Deco, and the whole vehicle has been completely restored, and it is beautiful. Now, theirs is not so much an RV as an empty exhibit hall type of vehicle, unfortunately. All the RV stuff has been removed, but it's still a beautiful thing. And heck, they've got license plate number 1 on the thing in Massachusetts. So I don't know what you would do with this thing. I don't know how practical it is, but it is an absolutely beautiful vehicle, and you should take a look and learn about the future liner entirely. It was such a cool idea, and it's a shame that we don't have those things anymore. So again, link in the show notes, or you can just search future liner for sale. And future liner does not have an E. It is footer liner. Just search for it. It's pretty cool. There were only 12 of them made, so it's pretty rare that one comes up for sale. Okay, this is an important one. This may be the most important thing of the podcast. Somebody driving an all-wheel drive vehicle in a national park recently got a ticket for it. So if you're not familiar with some of the national parks way out west, like specifically Death Valley, Great Basin, some of them, they have roads that are only for four-wheel drive and high-clearance vehicles. It says it. And you can get a fine if you go on those roads in anything but a four-wheel drive, high-clearance vehicle. But now they're drawing the line between four-wheel drive and all-wheel drive. Basically, this means no vans can go on these roads if they're factory spec. Now, if you've got an old Econoline with a Quigley 4x4 modification, something like that, you're probably okay. But if you've got an all-wheel drive Sprinter or an all-wheel drive Transit, that is not four-wheel drive by this definition, and you are not legally allowed to use them on these trails. And if you've seen all the off-road recovery videos on YouTube, you can see why. All-wheel drive and four-wheel drive are not the same thing. It's kind of complicated. I can't just explain it quickly. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive. There's full-time four-wheel drive. There is synchronous four-wheel drive or synchronous all-wheel drive. Anyway, the basic difference is, very basic, is that all-wheel drive vehicles like Subarus or most SUVs that are based on cars, all the wheels can move, but they don't all move at the same time. That's the difference. So you might have a front wheel moving or a rear wheel moving or one front wheel and one rear wheel, and it'll swap based on what the differential tells it to do. That's all-wheel drive. Four-wheel drive is you can force the front and rear wheels to move. And if you can lock the differentials, you can get even all four wheels moving at the same time. The difference is huge when you're doing rock crawling or low-speed 4x4 traveling. Now, I had a Land Rover. It had full-time four-wheel drive, which was a little bit different. It was kind of a mix of both. We're not going to get into that. That's a fairly rare system. So in most cases, especially with vans, you're going to deal with all-wheel drive. If you've got a pickup truck, you will have real four-wheel drive in most cases. So if you've got an F-150 or a Ram 1500 or a GMC, whatever the heck theirs is, you're probably going to have real four-wheel drive. If you have to shift anything, like with an actual shifter, that's real four-wheel drive. If you have four low as a setting, that's real four-wheel drive. If you just have a dial where you pick snow or mud or gravel, whatever, you might not. You might have all-wheel drive. Now, I have owned Subarus. They are incredibly capable vehicles, and I find them to be decent off-road vehicles, but not at the extremes. And according to the National Park Service, these roads are at the extremes and these vehicles are not allowed. And what's the fine, you might ask? It's $5,000 or 6 months in prison. Also, a collateral forfeiture, which is fancy talk for they will take your vehicle from you. By the way, the vehicle in the article is an article on Kelley Blue Book that we have linked in the show notes. The vehicle in question that they're talking about was a Subaru Crosstrek, one of the more capable Subarus. Just know, and I've said this before, you can get a van, and you can get a van with all-wheel drive, and it will be more capable than a standard van, but it is not an off-road rock crawler vehicle. It just isn't. With the possible exception of the Quigley 4x4 upgrade, that is a true system, but that's getting more and more rare. And there's a list of some of the roads, if you're familiar with these. Elephant Hill, Salt Creek, Horse Canyon, Lavender Canyon, Lockhart Canyon, and Colorado Overlook Road. Those are in Moab area. And don't go on those unless you've got some serious vehicle, because you could not only get stuck, now you can get a ticket. Okay, now this one. This is not so important, but I saw this article on the Daily Kos, you know, that great source for van life stuff. It's not. This article is entitled, Why Van Life is Not a Good Thing. Like, okay, so, you know, is it going to talk about the environmental impact or something like that? No, this is a rant. This article is a rant that... It does not inform anybody. It's just kind of picking on people in vans. The basic argument is that it's glamorizing poverty. Van life is just a way to choose to be homeless. It's like wearing the costume of homelessness. What? I'm sorry. I disagree 100%. I don't think people are cosplaying homelessness when they build out their van and travel. I disagree vehemently with this, and I think it's terrible that they would even suggest that. So I think this article was just created to give a rise, and Daily Kos disowns it and says this is an article not subjected to review. It's just somebody in the community, but it's coming up in news.google.com, so there it is. You can find it. You can search on it, Daily Kos. It's called WYFP. Don't know what that stands for. Van life and why it's not a good thing. Yuck. That's all I'm going to say about that. And another piece of bad news. I talked about this a while ago, too. If you're not familiar, JDM, Japan Domestic Market, refers to 25-year-old vehicles from Japan that are, they call it gray market, but they're legal to bring into the United States. Some of these vehicles are very cool. I'm always ranting about how we can't get the good vans in the U.S. while Japan can. And they made some really cool little campers way back in the day. And some of them were real four-wheel drive, going back to our first thing here. One of those was the Mitsubishi Delica. Now, in the U.S., they used to sell Mitsubishi vans. I remember working on them and installing two-way radios on them back in 86 or so. They're long gone now, but they kept making them in Japan, and people love to import them. Now, they're right-hand drive. You got to deal with the fact that you're sitting on the right hand of the vehicle in the U.S., but if you can deal with that, they're great vehicles. People have had a lot of fun with them. There's one problem now, though, and this has been a problem before. They're not seen as roadworthy vehicles by some states now. And the first was Maine. Maine basically said that you can't register these in the state of Maine. And now Michigan's doing the same thing. Although Michigan's reason is a little weird. Michigan has said that these are now considered K vans. That's K-E-I. K-vans are little tiny minivans, almost like golf carts in the shape of a van. They are not street legal in the U.S. in most cases. And so Michigan has basically said that this full-size minivan, I mean, this is a big vehicle, probably weighs 4,500 pounds, is a K-van, despite the fact that it's clearly twice the size and three times the weight. And as such, it can't be legally used on the roads, and it must be registered as an off-road vehicle. And you can drive it around the trails and stuff, but you can't drive it down the street to your house. So, if you're considering a JDM vehicle, and I can see why you would, they're pretty cool, they're not terribly expensive either, you can see the problems here. Some states' DMVs do not want these vehicles on their roads. You've got all the other problems of, you know, right-hand drive and finding parts and all that, but the fact that you can't register it is a really big problem. So, link to that article in the show notes as well. Just something else to consider when you're dealing with JDM. So thanks to everyone who has donated to the show at buymeacoffee.com/built2go. Every gallon of diesel that you buy at buymeacoffee.com helps me keep ads off the show, and I'm very happy to keep doing that. Thanks to all of you who have supported the show in the past and keep doing so every month. If you would like to be somebody who supports the show and possibly get a free sticker if you would like, go to buymeacoffee.com/built2go and buy me a gallon of diesel, and we will all thank you for that. Tech Talk. Let's have a little mystery tech talk here. So I'm going to play a sound for you. And this is indeed the sound I was hearing as I drove my Sprinter back from Vermont to Chicago. And this sound went on for a long time. So here's the sound. Okay, sounds bad, right? So I have been hearing a similar sound for quite a while now. And typically I'd start the vehicle and I'd hear that sound for 30 seconds, but as soon as I got a couple blocks away, it would go away. So I didn't think that much of it. I didn't think it was a big deal. Everything ran fine, except when it wasn't, but that noise wasn't causing any problems, so I kind of ignored it. I had a bunch of work done in the van. I've had the belt replaced. I've had power steering pump replaced, the turbo. I mean, there's been a lot of parts replaced in the van, and that noise was always there. So I'm like, okay, the mechanics have seen it. They're not worried about it. I'm not going to worry about it either. But on that trip to Vermont, on the way back, it got really, really bad. And I'm like, oh, God. So I thought it was something serious. And then halfway through the trip on the way back, it went away. So diagnostically, why would that noise start and why would it go away? Well, I think I have it figured out. But first, I had to do a test. And this is a great test. This is a great piece of information for you to know. If you hear a noise like that coming out of the hood of any vehicle, and you're wondering whether it is a squealing belt or the bearing on some pulley. And you've got lots of pulleys. You've got the idler pulley, and you've got the pulley that's built into your air conditioning compressor. You've got the pulley that is built into your power steering pump, and the pulley that's built into your alternator, and probably some more. Those have bearings. Bearings are pieces of metal that move against other pieces of metal, and they can wear out over time. So if you have an old vehicle, bearings go, it's a thing. But how do you know the difference between a belt squealing, which is fairly common as belts get older, or there's a loose belt, or a bearing going, which is somewhat more serious, because bearings will keep making that noise until they seize, and then when they seize, you're in big trouble. Reminding me of my Tiki Bago trip from Oregon to Illinois, where I had the water pump seize. Yeah, anyway, we'll ignore that for now. There's a test. It's a very simple test. All you have to do is run the engine at idle, pop the hood, and pour a bottle of water. You don't need the whole bottle, but, you know, pour some water onto the belt. This won't hurt anything. It's not much different than driving through a puddle. But if the sound stops immediately, you know it's a belt. Because the water is adding more friction to the belt. I know the water's slippery. Why is it adding more friction? Because at this pressure, water becomes actually sticky. It's adding friction. And if it stops, you know it's the belt. Because the belt is no longer squealing. Now, after about 30 seconds or so, the squeal will come back as the water evaporates. If it were a bearing, that sound would have continued. The belt would have kept going, and you would have kept hearing the sound. So here's what that sounds like. So, we know it's the belt. But why is it only sometimes? Why is the belt only squealing sometimes? Why does it go away? Does the belt heat up and then get more friction? I thought that might be the case, except that it went on for hours on this trip back. The belt was as warm as it was going to be after half an hour of driving or so that wasn't it. And then it dawned on me what was different about this trip. And it was that I was using the rear battery a lot. Basically, my diagnosis of what's happening here is that when my alternator is drawing a lot of power to charge the two batteries that are with the Sprinter, that come with the Sprinter, and the big 200 amp hour battery I have in the back, which I have a battery-to-battery charger for, that fairly hefty alternator in the Sprinter is working so hard that the belt can't keep up and it slips. But then eventually, once the batteries are charged, it doesn't draw so much, it lets off, and then the belt doesn't slip. I am 95% sure that's what's going on here. So all I really need to do is address the belt slipping. Now, that could mean a new alternator, it could mean just adjusting the belt, whatever. I might have to replace the belt. There's a bunch of different things that could be. That's a separate issue. I know I don't have a bearing issue, and that was what was most important. So, little bit of troubleshooting there. Just a nice thing to know that if you're worried about what's going on under your hood, whether it's a bearing or a belt, add a little bit of water, and you will know the difference. Product review. This is an interesting little thing that I've used a few times in my builds. It's tread tape. This is a tape. It's not a roll of tape. It's like a big sticker. And it's a stair tread that's covered with grippy stuff. It's like sandpaper, except it's black. And it has a stripe in the middle that is glow-in-the-dark. And you can put this on anything you want to. So, for example, in my case, in my build, I have a number of just strange areas inside the ambulance that need to be covered. And I've used this tape for that. And it creates a very durable, professional looking surface. But another place you could put them is if you have stairs that go into your van or on the rockers or even on the outside of the van. For example, if you have big doors and you're always bumping the bottom of the door into something, you could easily put these on the bottoms of your door and have like something to bump into rather than just the door. They're just a solution for any number of problems you could have on your vehicle. You could put them on your bumpers, you can put them on the sill plates, on the doors, and I can tell you that the stickers are serious business. I've never had one peel up. They just do what they're supposed to do. They stay there. In fact, they do that so much that if you want to remove them later, I think it's going to be a problem. So keep that in mind, that removing these things might not be easy. But they solve certain problems, and I think there's something you should be aware about if you're building out a van. I got mine at Menards. I forget how much they were, but I have a link in the show notes for them at Amazon.com, which they're $25. I'm pretty sure they were less than that at Menards. You can probably find them at Home Depot and Lowe's. too. But be aware, this is a solution for a problem that you may encounter where you have this area that you need to cover, and it needs to be covered with something strong, like maybe a place that you walk on or that's getting bumped. It's a heck of a lot easier than adding diamond plate or anything like that. And you can cut the thing with scissors, so if you need to make it custom, you can do that. Tales from the road. So I took a group of people to Australia, almost 10 years ago now. Man, time flies. And I hooked up with a local tour guide because, you know, I've never been to Australia. Well, I have been to Australia before, but I'm certainly not knowledgeable enough about Australia to give a tour. And we took a great tour. He took us around Sydney, and then he wanted to take us up to the nature-y areas around Sydney, which is called the Blue Mountains. Any of you in Australia, you know, like, oh, he did all the touristy stuff. You know, we went to Featherstone. Yes, we did all the touristy stuff, but most of us were from the U.S., and that was fun for us, so that's okay. We saw the quokkas. We saw the poor Tasmanian devil running around in circles and all that. But one of the big parts of this touristy thing is to go out in the Blue Mountains and do the Three Sisters. These are the rock formations. It's not fair to say this, but a lot of people do say this. It's Australia's Grand Canyon. It doesn't look like the Grand Canyon at all. It's just big rocks in that same regard. And in many ways, it's nicer than the Grand Canyon. So I don't think that the comparison is worth making. But you get the idea anyway. It's a big, natural, impressive area. And they have this crazy funicular train thing there where you actually start at the top of the mountain and then you ride this big train down that has like glass all around and you travel down this mountain with the Three Sisters in view, and it's really a spectacular thing. It might be touristy. It doesn't matter. I highly recommend you check it out. It's in Katoomba. You know, Australia has all these cool names. When our tour guide picked us up for that day in this really cool little bus, I noticed he was acting a little weird. He knew who I was. I'm leading the group. So, you know, he kind of broke the fourth wall with me a bit to find out what the group liked and stuff like that. And that's good. I appreciate that. I know what the group's interests are. He knows where the stuff is. Let's get together and make the best experience for everyone. This is very cool. This is the way it should work. And he was excellent at that. I could tell he was upset about something, though, and I wasn't sure. And he pulled me aside and he said, so I need to ask you something. How does your group feel about shopping? Now, in general, the groups that I do, we eschew shopping. I mean, we'll do some shopping. We'll do kind of interesting local shopping, but we're not interested in going to shopping malls or anything like that. The two things we avoid primarily are churches and shopping. And he said, I told him this, and he said, well, what if we went to like a little village that not too many tourists go to, and we do a little bit of local shopping and folks can see Australia goods that maybe they can't get in the States? And I thought, you know, that's fine. I think folks would like that. I think that's totally appropriate. We can do that. And then he brightened up a little bit and he's like, oh, okay, good, good. So I'm gonna make a few little changes to the itinerary, but I think it'll be good for your group. I'm like, okay, excellent. Thought it was a little weird. This guy does this all the time. I don't know why he's making changes, you know. Did something happen? Was my group being bad? Or I didn't know. But he knew, and he just wasn't saying it because he was hoping against hope that he was wrong about something that he picked up on early in the morning. And that thing he picked up on were the low clouds hanging over Sydney, and he knew what that meant. What that meant was that we were going to drive all the way out to Katoomba and get on this downhill train ride to see the Three Sisters. Except we weren't going to see a thing. He knew this ahead of time because there was so much fog up there in the Blue Mountains that we couldn't see the tops of trees, never mind all the way across this canyon valley to see these massive rock pillars. And we were a little disappointed because when you go on these trips, you do research, you see all the pictures, and you're like, oh boy, I can't wait to see that. And then you get there, and yeah, you don't see that at all. What you see is this very strange downhill train and just fog. And so what he had done was he prepared for us to be disappointed and then found something that would be interesting to entertain us. And that's professional. I give him full marks for that. He couldn't really cancel the trip. He'd already purchased the tickets, and that was what he was trying to play out in his head, how to handle that. So everything was great, and I appreciate a good tour guide, somebody who handles it like that. That was fine. I didn't hear a single complaint from anybody about not seeing the Three Sisters. We all had fun on the train, and we all had fun seeing what was out there. So he did his job very, very well. And then we got to the hotel where we were having lunch. Now, this hotel's fairly famous. I'm sure my Australian friends will know. It's the Carrington Hotel, which oddly is in Yosemite. Very confusing to us Americans that Yosemite is also in Australia, next to the Everglades House and Gardens. You can steal our names all you want, because honestly, we have a hard time pronouncing the names you don't steal, because this is near Ngulabulkarabang National Park. Anyway, so we go into the hotel, and they let us in. It's a fairly fancy place. It's been in a lot of movies and stuff. The Carrington Hotel is very well known. And they meet us at the door, and they say, the dining room is this way. You know, they're very fancy. And then, as I try to go through the door, the guy literally puts his hand on my chest and says, not you. And I thought, what? Now, I was leading this group, but I had paid for this tour. I mean, just because I'm leading the group doesn't mean I'm doing it for free. I paid the same as everybody else. I was just leading. And the tour guide said, oh, I know what's going on. And so we waited there. The guy who put his hand on me left, and the tour guide explained, they don't want us to eat with the guests. And I'm like, what the heck not? Well, it turns out that this place is fancy such that they saw the tour guide and I as the help. And we had to eat in a separate area away from the guests. And we even had different food. Now, I could have gone crazy, wild, angry at these people because obviously I had paid for the same experience as everyone else in the group. But it was so amusing and such a different experience for me that I just played along. Plus, it meant I got to have lunch privately with the tour guide, which was very, very valuable. But I have to say, the Carrington Hotel, the way they treat the help is pretty bad. I mean, they didn't need to do that. Being in the U.S., what would normally have happened in this situation is that me and the actual tour guide who we hired would have been welcomed guests at our table, and we would have shared food with them, and it would have been good. I mean, I kind of felt bad for the group because they were denied the knowledge and company of the tour guide who would have loved to talk to them. So, it was just a little bit of old English class warfare, I guess you'd say. It made for a memorable experience. I'm glad I'm able to look at it with humor now, because I know that certain other people I'm familiar with would not have seen it that way at all. A place to visit. Just to spite the Carrington Hotel, I would like you to consider at some point in your life visiting New Zealand. Sorry, Aussies. I mean, I love Australia, but I really love New Zealand. I've been there a couple times. I've been to both islands. And I have somebody in the Discord channel just said if I can ever get back there, he'll let me borrow one of his camper vans, which I appreciate so much. And I really hope that somehow I can take advantage of that. But New Zealand is a special place. It has become more popular in American culture of late with movies like The Wildepeople, The Price of Milk, Lord of the Rings, and so on. And it's just, I don't even know how to explain it. I remember when I was there the last time, I thought, I know how to explain New Zealand. It's Vermont, the country. Everything is beautiful and green. There's no direction you can turn to that isn't postcard worthy. All kinds of things to see, and yet everything is just a little bit odd. There are no native mammals in New Zealand, with the exception of three species of bats. That means when you're in the woods at night, no raccoons, no foxes, no wolves. There are no critters out there except birds and some invasive species like the possum from Australia, not to be confused with the opossum of North America. They have trees that are really giant ferns, and you can shake them, and then they shake like jelly. And yes, they've got the Lord of the Rings and all that stuff, but they also have caves with glowing worms on the ceiling that look like a galaxy. I mean, Milford Sound. Milford Sound is one of the absolute most beautiful places I've ever seen. Anyway, it doesn't matter what I say. Just go to New Zealand if you ever get the chance. It's not an easy place to go to. It's definitely a destination spot. You're going to have to fly there. And which island should you go to? Honestly, I think you should go to both. Auckland is the capital. It's on the North Island. That's the quote-unquote big city. It's a fascinating place. I love it there. It's probably where you would fly into, but not necessarily. And it has its charms, and Bay of Islands is up there, and that's another beautiful spot. But there are caves up there with the glowing worms. But the south is wilder and more mountainous. And anyway, I love New Zealand. I really appreciate the offer to go there, and I hope I can take advantage of it someday. So before you guys die, I want you all to promise me that you will go to New Zealand and see incredibly friendly people and really interesting things. And I will be envious every time you go, because honestly, if I could live anywhere in the world without any restrictions or political problems or, you know, leaving my family behind and all those issues, New Zealand would be right up there at the top of the list. Resource recommendation. This is, I hesitate to give this resource because it involves urban exploration, aka Urbex. Urbex is very popular. It has been for a while now, and it's basically the phenomenon of people exploring abandoned buildings and abandoned places, often illegally, often ignoring any form of safety, just for your YouTube, TikTok, Instagram pleasure. And I first ran into it back in the early 2000s when I was doing a website about strange places to visit New England. And boy, I have some ethical problems with it. Let's just say that. However, I'm also fascinated by it. I had a relative who worked at Danvers State Hospital, which is an urbex place now. A lot of the places that I knew when they were in business, malls and such, that I probably shopped in, are places for urban exploration now. And some of them have fascinating stories. There's a number of mansions that are empty for no good reason, and other buildings that you're just like, what happened here? I present this to you as a resource. If you are interested in abandoned places, whether to look at or to possibly plan trips for yourself, abandonedamerica.us is a pretty good resource for that kind of stuff. They at least tell interesting stories, and they have great photography for each of these things. For example, the SS United States, which has been laid up in Philadelphia for a lot of years. They have great information about that. This was the fastest ship in the world. Still is. Fastest cruise liner, let's say. At 35 knots, it went from Southampton to New York City. I mean, that's amazing how fast that is for a ship like this. It's a steamship. Anyway, they have a great tour of that. And just don't be jerks. Don't be breaking into places and ruining things and trespassing. I can't condone that at all. And always be safe, etc. You know the drill. But if you're interested in it and you just want to look at the pictures, it's no problem with that, really. Except that you're encouraging other people to do those things. All right, I'll stop. I'm off my soapbox now. I'm just presenting the information. It is abandonedamerica.us. I'll have a link in the show notes, but it's just going to be the same thing I told you. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 224. As weird as it was, I enjoyed making it, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it as well. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And if you need to get a hold of me for any reason, I am Jeff at BuiltToGo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. And until next time, remember the words of John Steinbeck, who said, "And now that you don't have to be perfect, you can be good."